real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Morning, everyone. I'm Pat Kreitler, founding editor of Up North News. You can find us on the web at upnorthnewswi.com or on social media. Just search for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. We're going to meet with Rebecca Cook in just a moment. But first, for background, for those of you who weren't listening in our last hour, there are four candidates running in the Democratic primary, hoping to succeed the retiring Democratic Congressman Ron Kind in Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. We are talking to three of the candidates today and one more on Thursday morning. We will try to hit a lot of the similar questions and similar topics so that folks can judge for themselves who they think would be the better choice to represent the 3rd Congressional District. We'll do that for about the first 50 minutes of each hour. And so before we get into some Q&A, Rebecca Cook, let me say good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you doing, Pat?
Great here. And I see Luke, our producer, is already taking music requests from our guests. Giving you 9 to 5 right off the bat. Hopefully things feel good and comfortable for you here as we get going. And as I did with Deb McGrath last hour, Rebecca, you know, there's no reason for me to, you know, stomp all over your introduction when you can, you know, tell your story best yourself. So before, you know, take about 60 seconds before I start making some coughing noises to interrupt you and introduce yourself to everyone.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. A little bit about myself. I'm an Eau Claire native, so I grew up on a dairy farm here in Eau Claire. Grew up showing cattle in 4-H from pretty much the time I could walk. That's very much a big part of my heritage and identity. Like a lot of Wisconsin farmers, we had to sell our cows because of the price of milk and competition with larger dairies, which was, you know, tough. But I think I learned a lot from growing up on a farm, that kind of grit and determination that you don't give up when times are tough. I went on to go to school in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the University of St. Thomas, and I worked at an affordable housing nonprofit all 4 years of college. That was my work study job. Between that, Pell Grants and waitressing, that's how I got through school. And I eventually came back home here to Eau Claire, to my hometown, where I ran a small business in downtown Eau Claire for the last 7 years. It's called Red's Mercantile. So we sell mostly made in America goods. So thinking about supply chains, where things are made, that's important to me. And then I also founded a nonprofit here called the Red Letter Grant. So we support women entrepreneurs throughout 10 counties in West Central Wisconsin by awarding startup capital in the form of $2,000 grants. And so I'm stepping up now to run for U.S. Congress because I think we need somebody, I think we need a working class candidate that really understands what it means to show up and advocate for working families. I'm still running both that small business and nonprofit and a 19 county congressional campaign all at the same time. And it's been quite the journey. Have been in this race almost a year now. So,
and talking to people about a litany of issues. And so we'll start with economic issues first, inflation and other matters. Right. And what Congress, you know, can and should be doing. We know the gridlock and the dysfunction and how easily it comes to Congress. And yet, you know, there are things that Congress can and should do for the middle class and for working families in Western Wisconsin and across the country. But, you know, right now we're dealing with some, I always hate to say post-pandemic inflation. I say as the pandemic is being better managed, we have inflation in the economy that is hurting household budgets. So talk to us a bit about your views on economic issues, what Congress can do, and what you can advocate for to help Wisconsin families and farmers and entrepreneurs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been hearing a lot about inflation, I think more than anything on the trail these days. Particularly I was at a lot of dairy breakfasts throughout the month of June. And a lot of people asked me, what are you going to do about the damn gas prices? And a lot of folks were, you know, looking to blame Joe Biden. But I don't think it's Joe Biden to blame. I think it's corporations that are very much price gouging consumers and using both the pandemic and the war in Ukraine, I think, to blame that surge in pricing, when really we need to be taking on corporations that are, you know, price gouging folks both at the pumps and at the cost of everyday goods at the grocery store. And that takes, I think, somebody that's not a career politician, right? Somebody that's not an incumbent lining their pockets with special interest dollars, you know, and protecting a lot of those corporations that are in turn reaping billions of dollars in profit while everyday folks are, you know, really hurting. I think it also takes somebody that's going to enforce antitrust laws. And, you know, that's important to me. I think that so much of business has become a huge conglomerate. You look at like the meat processing industry, for example, it's now down to four major companies. You know, the cost of meat has gone up at the store, but that's not trickling down to farmers and ranchers, right? And so I think it really takes somebody that's going to come in to enforce antitrust laws and to take on big corporations. And I intend to do that.
We've got less than a minute before our break, but I do want to follow up on that to say that answer has very much a populist appeal, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But in a very competitive district between Republicans and Democrats, do you find that kind of a message, while it resonates really well with some, you feel like that can be enough in a competitive district where people still look at the Republican side of the economic equation?
Yeah, I think it can be. I think I've also given that answer both to Democrats and Republicans. And I think what most folks that are, 30 seconds, okay. I think what most folks are really concerned about too is that they've got somebody who's actually advocating for them. I think people are tired of lip service from politicians, career politicians, and it's time for somebody to really step up and fight for people.
Rebecca Cook is our guest, one of the candidates running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District. We'll take a 2-minute break, and then we'll be right back with more with Rebecca Cook right after this. This is Up North News.
News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Franklin.
And it's on. That's what I was about to say, but he beat me to it. So yeah, do get that newsletter. Head over to our website where we cover stories, including this race for the 3rd Congressional District in Western and Central Wisconsin. Rebecca Cook is joining us. And we started by talking about economic issues, which also took us a bit into taxes and farming and things like that. And of course, the competitive nature of the district. But I was really taken by, you know, something you said about being an advocate rather than necessarily going with what the, you know, the conventional wisdom says or the lobbyists say, and to bring essentially the voice of a real person there. And I know when I talked to you in an earlier interview, you described yourself as the working class candidate in the race.
Yeah, I think that's super true. I mean, so, I grew up working class. I'm still, like I said, running a small business and a nonprofit organization while I'm running a 19-county congressional campaign. And I think that that's rare. I think it's rare, you know, to have somebody that's not retired or is able to independently fund their campaign to be running for office. But I think if we want a Congress that's more reflective of what our country is, we need to make it easier for, you know, working class people to run for office. And, you know, I think, I've run a very, I think, localized campaign. We've done a 19-county district tour throughout the entire district, really working to, I think, connect with folks about issues that are most important to them, and not just leaders, but workers and community members throughout the 3rd CD.
You said that people have talked about gas prices. The other thing that people like to cite is taxes. And certainly we've discussed at length here about the harm that was done by the Republican 2017 tax code overhaul. When you talk to people about tax policy and what would give, you know, middle class families more of a fair shake in the taxes that they pay for the services that we all need, what do you tell them?
That hasn't been something that's come up a ton in the conversations that I've had out on the trail. But in my perspective, you know, I think that we need to be taxing, you know, more of the wealthy elite in our country, and that they're paying their fair share of taxes, that the burden isn't falling just on middle class Americans. I think, you know, they've been unfairly taxed in the past.
One of the things that certainly helped for a time was a temporary expansion of the child tax credit. So between that and certainly the barriers that families are facing trying to afford daycare, or that, you know, daycare providers are facing trying to find workers, you know, that will, you know, get a living wage. Are these things that are a priority in terms of what you're hearing and what you might do if elected to Congress?
Yeah, I think that's something that folks, you know, they received a great benefit from in that time. The other things that I've heard from a childcare perspective in the district that I think have been very interesting, you know, I think our approach to having having childcare policy that is not one size fits all. So I've had conversations like in Black River Falls, there's a group of women that are childcare providers that have formed a cooperative, all independent providers that are working to purchase a building to be able to, you know, subsidize some of the cost of what they have been having to charge out of their at-home facilities, which is really interesting to me. I think for me, it's interesting to see what kind of solutions communities have come up with on their own, and then how I can be an advocate to getting federal funding to those or replicating those throughout the district. So for example, you know, with those folks in Black River Falls, it's not just the cost of childcare, but it's also just the accessibility. There aren't providers to begin with in some of our rural areas throughout the district. Another unique solution that I heard from the mayor of La Crosse was an idea that businesses, so, you know, you think about like Gunderson and some of the bigger employers in our district, they have their own childcare within their companies and corporations. And smaller and mid-sized businesses don't have access to having a childcare facility for their employees, right? And so I think, you know, he had a great idea of having a cooperative where small businesses and mid-sized businesses are able to buy shares within a cooperative to do that. So I'm really interested too, and I think these nuanced ideas that have come and out of communities that are really solutions oriented, and thinking about how we can back that in a bigger way.
Let's turn to healthcare now, and we'll get to the Affordable Care Act in a second, but I want to start with abortion care and women's reproductive health rights, the repeal of Roe v. Wade, you know, by a right-wing takeover of the U.S. Supreme Court. This is something that, you know, I don't think any single election is necessarily going to address one way or the other, though this November might be a pretty good start on that. Talk about what you're hearing, what you think the impact will be this fall, and, you know, what steps you would want to see made if elected.
I think everyone that would agree that's a Democrat that's running for office this cycle, that we need to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law. You know, this is something that we've got to be on offense here. And I think it doesn't start just with reproductive freedoms. You know, I think that we're going to start seeing this infringe into other rights and other freedoms, like gay marriage, which is one of the things that I am really happy to see Senator Baldwin pushing forward, is the Respect for Marriage Act. You know, being on offense before something like that is brought through the Supreme Court. That's something that I would have voted for in the House. When it comes back to reproductive freedoms, you know, I think that that decision is to be made with, you know, your partner and your doctor. I don't want to be, as a congressperson, in your doctor's office, sitting with you while you're making those very personal decisions and personal choices. And I think that the far right is, in essence, calling for government mandated pregnancies. And I'm for, and, you know, really believe that women and LGBTQ folks can make those decisions for themselves.
There has been a decade now spent with proponents of the Affordable Care Act essentially being on defense, as Republicans have tried time and time again to kill it. It's something Ron Johnson has promised he would try to do if he's elected to a third term. So that battle is never going to go away, even while at the same time the Affordable Care Act was not perfect. Any piece of legislation is a snapshot in time. What are your priorities in terms of addressing what we do about providing healthcare in a way that frankly, no longer makes us look foolish compared to the rest of the developed world in terms of cost and in terms of outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as a small business owner, I myself am on the exchange and it doesn't cover very much. I have catastrophic health insurance, so I get it. You know, I grew up on a dairy farm. We didn't have healthcare coverage. When my dad cut his fingers off on the farm, we drove him, my grandpa drove him to the hospital versus getting an ambulance. So, you know, I think that I really understand the cost of healthcare and what it's like to struggle to have it. And, you know, the Affordable Care Act, as you mentioned, is not perfect. And so I think we need to work to making it work for everyday Americans. Some of the things that I'm a really big advocate for is from a Medicare perspective is expanding Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing, the very things that deteriorate as folks age. My parents will get their dental work done in Mexico because it's frankly cheaper for them to do there than it is in our own country. And I want to see our parents and grandparents age with dignity. Also, when it comes to big pharma and, you know, negotiating, you know, drug prices, that needs to happen through Medicare so that our grandparents and parents are able to afford their medications. And so these are really pragmatic things that I think that we can get folks to come across the aisle to work for. I know there's a candidate in this race that is a staunch proponent of Medicare for all. I'm not going to promise something on this campaign that I can't deliver in 2 to 4 years that I know in a gridlocked Congress is going to be difficult to do. So we got to work with what we have, because while we're waiting for a pure or perfect bill, people are really struggling to pay for their medical bills.
You really helped illustrate what some folks are going through in, again, choosing to go to other countries, or that we've had to talk about importing prescription drugs from other countries as a way to do something. Is that strikes me as it's got to be one of the most nonpartisan issues that you hear about at fairgrounds and dinners and things like that, is about something as basic as being able to negotiate Medicare, being able to negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies on drug prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I hear fairly consistently throughout the district, and it doesn't matter who I'm talking to. But I think the talking points are different on each side of the aisle about who's doing what, and I think it's about continuing to have those real conversations that drill down. One thing I've noticed in running for office is that politicians like to make sweeping generalizations. I think you'll probably hear from everybody running in this race, I want to increase access to affordable quality healthcare. Great. I think most people would agree that's great, but how do we drill down into what that actually means and what kind of specific policy are you going to, you know, utilize and push forward to make that an actual reality? And I'll notice this on both sides of the aisle, that people don't really drill down and speak the language of everyday people to have those conversations, right? And so I'm really trying to do that. You know, if you check out my issues page on cookforwisconsin.com on my priorities page, I wrote that. I have DC consultants, but I think it's really important for constituents to hear in very plain language what it is that I plan to do, and very specifically.
Let's switch then to community safety and specifically gun safety. We're in a district represented by a moderate Democrat who has voted no on a couple of recent pieces of gun safety legislation. We have a state where there has long been discussion of, you know, the hunting culture and not wanting government to come take our guns, as ridiculous as that sounds, but it gets in the way of talking about, again, those common sense ideas that would keep our kids from getting killed in schools. We nearly had a mass shooting episode in Madison when the Highland Park, Illinois shooter drove up to Wisconsin for a time with his weaponry. What are the things that you're proposing? And as well, is there something in a tightly competitive district like this? Is there something that you say that, well, I'm going to go this far in terms of gun safety legislation, but I wouldn't go to this point? What are those discussions like for you?
Yeah, well, I think the time for thoughts and prayers is over. I think there's a lot of fear mongering that happens in these conversations as well. There is a heritage of hunting and gamesmanship in Western Wisconsin, but I don't think that AR-15s belong at deer camp. I think they belong on a battlefield. And I say that very openly and strongly. I'm a candidate that has a distinction by Moms Demand Action. You know, I've been at a labor union meeting where somebody raised their hand and said, are you going to take our guns? And I said, no, I'm not going to take your guns. I want everybody to be as responsible of a gun owner as you are. You know, and he said, well, you know, I feel like Democrats are just going to take our guns. And I said, that's not true. I said, did you get a background check when you got your firearm? He said, I did. I said, do you think most folks should get a background check when they get a firearm? Well, yeah. So then I think we both agree on universal background checks.
We do. You know, we do, as does, right. You know, the, like 80% of the population. And so if you'll, you know, again, forgive the naughty word, but I'm going to say this a lot to our radio audience and on Facebook. Nobody's coming to take your damn guns. That it's just not what it is. Rebecca Cook is answering questions about that and a host of other issues. Another segment with her after this next break. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
I've been steady learning long, keeping this turntable spinning. Everything from John.
We are going to have ourselves one pleasant day for at least the first chunk of the day, a little bit warmer than yesterday. There's a chance of thunderstorms the farther north you go, generally speaking, with low 80s today, high 80s tomorrow, and then we're going to have a quiet Thursday and Friday with the mid 80s, which is just the way I like it because I have dropped the top on the Jeep Wrangler, and I do not want to put that top on until I absolutely have to. Rebecca Cook is our guest, one of four Democratic candidates running in the 3rd Congressional District primary, going up against presumptive Republican nominee Derek Van Orden. We'll talk about him in a bit in the race for Congress in this area. Before the break, Rebecca, we were talking about gun safety and really what you're telling people, because you have to overcome, you know, political misinformation and myths. And we had to interrupt before we went to the break. So tell us more about how those discussions are going, because it is something that, you know, we often hear about single issue voters, and there are more than one or two single issue gun voters out there.
Right, for sure. Well, and I was mentioning, you know, I'd had a conversation at a union meeting where somebody had asked, you know, if I was going to take their guns. And as I'd mentioned, I want everybody to be as responsible a gun owner as that person was, right? And we both agreed that universal background checks are something that we both believe in, right? You know, and the other pieces that are really important to me are enforcing red flag laws, you know, which put a red flag up when somebody is, you know, that a family or a spouse can put a red flag up when somebody is going through a mental health crisis and might be of harm to themselves or others. Or if somebody is a domestic abuser, that puts a flag up so those folks can't, you know, purchase firearms to harm other people. The other thing is closing the Charleston loophole, which, you know, expedites the time in which somebody can get a firearm. It doesn't go through all the proper background checks that are important. And so, you know, those are things that to me are very pragmatic and common sense, and that I think really gun owners are also supportive of. And I'm not afraid to have those conversations in very red parts of the district with gun owners, with anybody. Those are things that I'm not really compromising on, but I think that when you have those real conversations, there is actually a lot more common ground than I think what some of the fear mongering that's in a lot of the media and that, you know, kind of perpetuates where people have real good, and the Republican Party perpetuates as well. But
the fact of the matter is, if you do an independent survey of NRA members, they will be in favor of a lot of these common sense measures because gun owners and hunters don't want their kids killed in school either.
Yeah. But
let's switch over to natural resources. A recent U.S. Supreme Court decision really threatens the entire regulatory framework of how we care for our natural resources, and frankly, by extension, how we care for consumers, how we care for workers. We're an unusual country in that we delegate or assign a lot of power to the states. And what happens is if you don't have national standards, you then end up with a checkerboard. And that's what we're getting with abortion rights now, is a checkerboard of 50 states. And that's the way some people want it. Others would like to see national standards for things, not the least of which is, you know, things like pollution. You know, you can't control the air, you know, at state borders. It's something that there's a reason we need an EPA. There's a reason that we signed on to international accords. And yet, that these moves, Rebecca, often get denigrated as being expensive to implement, or they don't do any good unless other countries are participating. So when you talk about a changing climate and the need for natural resources protection, what are your priorities there?
Yeah, well, I will tell you from the 19 county district tour that I did, surprisingly, one of the biggest issues, I guess, surprisingly to me, especially in rural communities, one of the biggest things that came up was climate change and the environment. People are really concerned whether, you know, you're in Adams Friendship or you're in La Crosse. I thought I'd hear more about that from environmental activists, right, in La Crosse, but all throughout the 3rd Congressional District, people are concerned about that and what kind of future we're going to be leaving for our children and grandchildren. And so when I think about the environment, I think about, you know, like how I think about politics and that it's all local, right? And in this district in particular, we have a lot of water quality issues. And so, you know, we have PFAS in our well waters here in Eau Claire, in La Crosse and French Island. They're getting water shipped into them because they can't drink it. And, you know, I think there's something that's, as you mentioned, has been brought up through the state legislature, the CLEAR Act that calls for more research into PFAS, more testing, and then remediation. But that's at the state level. There's nothing like that really exists from an EPA perspective. And so I'd like to see something similarly come up through on the federal side that sets a standard nationally for that, so that we're able to control that issue here in this district. Additionally, you know, we've got a lot of issues with water runoff. And I think that with farms and what that does to our streams and waterways, algae blooms, and how that can contaminate what is one of the most beautiful, you know, waterways of our whole, of this, the Driftless region. It's very much a place where lots of folks like to canoe and hike, and that really impacts our economy if we're not protecting those waterways from farm runoff. And I think that it calls for somebody that is going to do coalition building that's not just with the Wisconsin DNR or UW Extension, but also brings farmers to the table who are truly stewards to the land and figuring out those solutions to move forward.
We, by and large, focus on domestic issues as close to home as possible. That seems only natural, but we really can't lose sight of the fact that we need members of Congress who are going to pay attention to foreign policy and things that are going to be very important to the country. We have we're monitoring a Russian invasion of Ukraine. We just took out Al-Qaeda's leader after many years of searching. There's always ongoing, you know, trade tensions with China that at any point could become military tensions, and even something like Brexit and, you know, trade agreements with Europe and with other allies can sometimes become contentious. So I know these things don't come up as often, but they are extremely vital. And I wonder how you talk about your own priorities on these or any other subjects that go beyond our borders that you feel Congress needs to be focused on.
Sure. Well, you know, I think throughout this campaign, you know, the foreign policy issue that's come up probably the most because of its timeliness, you know, throughout the time that I've been running this campaign, is the war in Ukraine. And, you know, I have been very supportive of, you know, this kind of sanctions first approach that our country has taken. I don't want to push for, you know, increased military action when it comes to supporting Ukraine. I don't want us to get involved in another war. And so, you know, I'm very much of a sanctions first kind of approach and the way that the Biden administration has been handling this currently. So, and that's, I mean, really, that's the conflict that I think that gets brought up at doors or gets brought up in conversations with people. I think particularly in this district, that's just what's most top of mind for people right now.
I would imagine that immigration is one of those as well, simply because Republicans, and especially Wisconsin Republicans, do a very focused job of demonizing people from Central America who are, you know, fleeing and seeking a better life. And we have Wisconsin Republicans who seem to somehow think our southern border is not with Illinois, but is, you know, somewhere in Texas. So as a result, you have this denigration of immigration, even at a time when, especially in a farm economy, we need legal immigration. We need immigration reform more than ever. Do people get that when you talk about that, or do you still see a hurdle to climb when it comes to talking about immigration and what realistically it involves for Wisconsin?
I think people do get that. I think farmers in particular, too, want to see a pathway to citizenship for their workers that are coming, you know, back and forth. They want to see a pathway to citizenship. And I think, you know, thus far, it's only been patchwork policies. We need comprehensive immigration reform so folks that are living in the shadows can be parts of our, you know, big parts of our community legally. Right. And so, but I think the approach thus far has just been a lot of partisan bickering, but I really do feel that a lot of folks within this district, this is something that they want. This is a big part of our working population, and they want to see those folks have the benefits that they deserve and to be able to come out of the shadows and live full lives here in West Central Wisconsin.
Well, it doesn't hurt at all that they're fleeing places that, you know, frankly, have not been democracies. And now we face similar threats here. So turning our attention to, you know, the insurrection, you know, people lying about the 2020 election results. Let's be fair, election security should always be something that's top of mind. You should always be working on it. So what are those conversations like? Do you still find a lot of skeptics and doubters about 2020? And how do you approach that and frame it with a likely Republican opponent who is feeding into that narrative?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of faith in our election workers and our county clerks to be executing our elections in a fair and safe way. I don't come across a lot of that in the conversations that I've had, you know, particularly being in a Democratic primary right now. I have been in a lot of red communities. I think mostly people want opportunities to be able to vote easier. Right. I think that's something that I've heard a lot from folks in being able to, you know, submit their ballots. I mean, we saw the drop boxes being taken away. I think that's harmful to take away opportunities for people to participate in our democracy.
And yet, if you emerge from this primary, you're going to be facing Derek Van Orden on a stage, on a debate stage someplace. And what kind of message are you going to deliver to him directly when the topic comes up about his presence on the Capitol grounds January 6th and about you know, defending democracy overall?
Yeah, I think that him being on the Capitol grounds was, in my opinion, very un-American when the folks that were a part of that riot in D.C., their focus was to kill senators. You know, and I think, you know, I think to me, we need somebody that's going to provide stability and security in this region and not be stirring doubt in voters and stirring more chaos within both this region and this country, but that's actually going to drill down to get things done for working families.
So getting things done is where we're going to wrap up our visit here, and talk to me about where you think you can bring people together as a member of Congress. And at the same time, what's at stake if there should be a Republican takeover of the House and possibly the Senate as well? You know, if you're part of, say, let's say you win and yet the House goes Republican, you know, people are going to look to see where you can come together. So let's wrap up by talking about what kind of a congresswoman you would be.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be a congresswoman that really fights for everyday Wisconsinites, right? I'm, like I mentioned before, a working class candidate. I grew up working class, and I'm going to bring those common sense values with me to DC. I plan to run a very constituent centered office that, you know, even being one of 400 and some in Washington, you know, you don't and especially if I was in the minority, there's not an opportunity necessarily to pass things, but running a constituent-centered office, I think is really important. There's a lot of things that you can do with a congressional budget here at home. Having a chief of staff based in district that's hyper-focused on the issues that everyday folks care about. And so, you know, taking on, as we talked out throughout this segment, a lot of the issues that are important to me, taking on corporations that are price gouging consumers, working to lower inflation, right? From a healthcare perspective, lowering costs both for our seniors and working families, and working to protect our environment that I think is so vital to both our economy and our future.
Rebecca Cook, candidate for Congress in the 3rd District as part of the Democratic primary next Tuesday, August 9th. Rebecca, it was a real pleasure. Thank you for visiting with us.
Thanks so much, Pat.
Tomorrow on the program, we will have Robert Craig of Citizen Action Wisconsin in our 8 o'clock hour, Kirk Bangsted and Kristen Lyerly at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, and the Mark Newman, candidate for Congress, in Thursday's 9 o'clock hour, Brad Paff, candidate for Congress, in our next hour. And we will continue our conversation here after the break with more. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
Having a record year. Yeah, I'm having a record year.
Wisconsin Conversation. Real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Again, we will have State Senator Brad Paff in our next hour, the third of four candidate visits we'll be doing for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. There is another big primary coming up, and that would be actually two big primaries next Tuesday, one for U.S. Senate. That is also a Democratic primary, although it has become, you know, essentially a done deal with Mandela Barnes looking like the presumptive nominee at this point to challenge Ron Johnson in the fall. So the other big primary that remains statewide is for governor, and the Republicans who would like to challenge Tony Evers as he runs for re-election come November. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Timothy Ramthan, the assemblyman from Campbellsport, whose only claim to fame was simply being one of the first people to really amplify the big lie, to really, you know, try to be as Trumpy as they come. It's gotten him nowhere in terms of polling. You know, the Marquette poll shows him a distant third behind former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish and millionaire business owner Tim Michaels, who frankly is trying to, I always talk about people trying to be more Trumpy than Trump. This is a guy who's trying to become the DeSantis of Wisconsin, which is, when talking about DeSantis, and I can't believe I'm casting Donald Trump in a positive light, but DeSantis is like Trump's evil twin, you know, in terms of actually being able to turn, you know, the mechanisms of state government into something that literally punishes people for who they are, or what they say, or how they act. And it is something that Michaels would no doubt do if he was elected governor. But to do that, you have to win the primary and go up against Rebecca Clefish, Scott Walker's lieutenant governor for those 8 years, who once upon a time thought she was waltzing right into this nomination, because, you know, why wouldn't she, being the former lieutenant governor, but found out the hard way that, you know, the far right wing of the party did not see her as right wing enough. And she had a real fork in the road at some point to either, you know, go with the full blown tinfoil hat brigade, or, you know, to say things that are a bit more realistic. And while I have a lot of criticisms about, you know, say Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, I'll say this much. He has said, you know, quite emphatically, he's not in favor of this so-called decertification push of the 2020 results because it's not legal. It's not possible. There is no mechanism. But more importantly, there was no widespread fraud. There was no fraud of any consequence in 2020. This is all silly. It should have gone away a long time ago. And so Rebecca Clefish, to her credit, in a debate yesterday, did say that she would not go along with a push to decertify the election. I'm looking at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's coverage and also the questions that they asked of each of the candidates. And as I looked through the responses, you know, one thing is clear, and that is that, again, we're going to hear crime. It basically is if there are piles of burning tires, you know, in Altoona, in Brilliant, in Eagle River, and that, you know, scary people are coming from Milwaukee, code, you know, for you. And so we need to get tough on crime. That is not remotely a top issue for any working family around most of Wisconsin, who's just trying to, you know, work hard, play by the rules, get ahead, you know, and yet you have, you know, Clefish answered the question with, you know, crime will not stop until criminals know their actions will have consequences. Yeah, duh. I mean, crime is bad. We should punish criminals. You know, you've got Michael saying Milwaukee's crime problem includes much more than, you know, reckless driving. We will do this, this, and this. Again, you'll get this from the attorney general candidates too. And I got to say, this makes me almost laugh every 4 years when we have an attorney general's race. They get into a whole tough on crime mentality, and state attorney generals don't normally do that. They're working on other legal issues, usually involving what the legislature and the governor are doing. But you're going to hear, you know, crime all the time from the candidates for attorney general and for governor. But at least, as I mentioned, when they finally got off crime and got asked about the, you know, Donald Trump's claims about the 2020 election loss, the Journal Sentinel flat out asked, do you believe Trump is correct? And Clefish, Michaels, and Ramthan all refused to answer the question with a yes or no. But at least Clefish in a debate said that she would not go along with decertification, whereas Ramthan said he would go there, I believe he said, in a nanosecond. You know, and Michaels is trying to really embrace that endorsement from Donald Trump, but without hitching everything to him in terms of a 2024 endorsement. That just tells you at least he's aware that he's got his own, you know, race to run with first. And, you know, that is going to be a tight one. Luke, you're talking that Tuesday night, some of you, not me, because I'm old, I have an early bedtime for this new morning show, but some of you are going to be up late Tuesday night looking for these results.
Yeah, I kind of burn the candle on both ends. I'm historically a night owl, but this new job has got me up very early in the mornings, and therefore I have to reconcile some of those problems. But Tuesday is going to be one of those days of an extra pot of coffee, or well, at least Wednesday morning for me, because we're going to be doing some special election coverage with Civic Media here on this station and the variety of stations that we have across Wisconsin, 8 to 11 p.m. We're going to be doing a breakdown of the primaries that you just discussed with the candidates here in Wisconsin Third, as well as the GOP gubernatorial primary and the Democratic U.S. Senate primary. Like you did say, that is kind of more of a consolidation in the last 7 or 8 days or so. And so it'll be special coverage. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of Wisconsin political pundits on talking about all of the different races, and I'm looking forward to it. So it's going to be an exciting time.
The one thing the candidates did do right, the Republican candidates for governor in this Journal Sentinel questionnaire, was address this question. Where does up north begin in Wisconsin? Needless to say, it's a root question for
an question.
Outlet called Up North News.
Yeah, crucial.
It is. It's very crucial. And to their great credit, their answers were what you would expect. Rebecca Clefish says, depends on who you ask. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. Up north is more of an idea than an actual line across the state. It's kind of like the feeling you get at any of Wisconsin's great supper clubs when you order a brandy old fashioned, though personally, I believe it's north of Highway 64. Tim Michaels said that I've called Wisconsin home for almost 60 years now. Not true. Connecticut, New York City. But he says, I'll go with Highway 29. and Ramtham. Wisconsin's a beautiful state no matter where you are. Up north implies the Northwoods, rural places for hunting, fishing, camping. Lake access means more to me rather than an actual geographical location. None of them answered the question, and none of them were, you know, specifically, and none of them were supposed to. You don't, that's the one. We're not doing it here at Up North News. Trust me, it is truly a state of mind. We continue our candidate interviews with Brad Paff right after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News.